1 Chronicles chapter 12 and verse 33 and 38. 1 Chronicles chapter 12 verse 33 and 38. I'll read the two verses. Of Zebulun, which went forth to battle, expert in war, with all instruments of war, 50,000 which could keep rank. They were not of double hearts. Then in verse 38, all these men of war that could keep rank came with a perfect heart to Hebron to make David king over all Israel. And the rest also of Israel were with one heart to make David king. Now all of God's people, all believers, are soldiers of Christ, and we're well aware of that. But in these two verses, there's a phrase that occurs in both verses, which is very significant. I don't know about you, but it is with me, reading through books like the Chronicles, it's often very difficult to find anything of profit or anything that we can see to our profit. But these two verses contain this phrase in them that the men could all keep rank. And in both verses it says that they could keep rank. Now, we're to remember, if we're believers, that we're soldiers of the Lord Jesus Christ. We're no longer unregenerate unbelievers. But to put it another way, Christians are soldiers and they're not invalids. And as we go through the Bible and look at various texts, we find that again and again it reminds us that we are soldiers. But if we're soldiers, it means that we're involved in a war. You don't have soldiers if there's no possibility of war. All nations have soldiers because there's always a threat on this earth of war in some form or other. And these phrases in these two verses remind us that there is a war on. There is a war to be fought. The Apostle Paul said to Timothy, "War a good warfare." He didn't say to Timothy, "Well, just sit back and take it easy." He said, "War a good warfare." There is a war to be fought. But so often, if we stop and analyse the situation, we would rather be in a clinic or in a hospital where we can look for comfort and ease and blessing. But there's a war on. The enemies that we have are the world, the flesh and the devil. And they come in many different forms. And in the New Testament in particular, we come across so many different texts which remind us that there is a war on. Paul, writing to Timothy again in another place, says, "Endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ." Endure hardness, he says. Then in another place he says, "Fight the good fight of faith." And even the Philistines realized that you had to be brave and courageous and suffer discomfort if you were to win battles. Because in Samuel's day, when they learned that Israel had brought the Ark of the Covenant into the camp, the Philistines said to each other, "Quit yourselves like men." In other words, they were encouraging each other to be brave and to fight valiantly. But when we look at this, these two verses, and this particular phrase that occurs in these two verses, it reminds us something which I think we very, very rarely think about. And that is, if we're Christian soldiers, we're, in other words, under a sergeant major. We're not just going about, we should be going about just doing our own thing. It's as if we're under a sergeant major. These men could keep rank. But how was it that they could keep rank? People don't normally keep rank or keep step automatically. It's something that they had to learn. It's something they had to be trained at. And it's as if Christians are called to be in this situation, as if we're under sergeant major. We're told to put on the whole armour of God in Ephesians chapter 6. But it's no good putting on armour just to dress up. When I did my national service, all the equipment that we had, we were trained how to put it on, how to use it. And we had to have it ready. It wasn't just a matter of dressing up and looking smart. Yes, when we finished our basic training and we passed out, we all had photographs taken. But there was weeks and weeks of training before we could have those photographs taken, before ever they would allow a camera anywhere near us. Because we had to learn how to use our equipment and our weapons. But it doesn't mean that we're all going to be failures. Paul could say at the end of his life, "I have fought a good fight." Here he was. He knew that his days were limited. And he could say, "I've fought a good fight." So Paul was saying, it's possible for a Christian to fight a good fight. Well, these people in Israel of old, we're told, were keeping rank. They were a disciplined company. They could keep rank, they could keep step. Keeping step is something that needs quite a amount of practice. Those that have been in the forces will know that if you're out of step, you tread on somebody else's heels, literally. Usually that makes you very unpopular, because if you tread on somebody else's heels, it usually scores the backs of their highly polished boots. And so not only are you in trouble from the sergeant major, whoever happens to be drilling you at the time, but you're very unpopular with your comrade, because he's now got to spend hours and hours polishing his boots to restore them to pristine condition. So although that's the case in a secular army, it's the case in the church too. If we're out of step, if we walk out of step with other church members, we figuratively tread on somebody's heels, and it does them damage. But you see, these people could keep rank. They're all going in the same direction. They're all keeping in their correct position. You know what it's like when a column of soldiers is marching along, one in the middle, or anyone can't just wander off to the side, and if the column's marching along the middle of the road, an individual soldier can't make up his mind that, well, he'd prefer to walk along the side of the road. He has to keep his position. And so it is with Christian soldiers, because we're working together. We're working together for a common aim. There should be none working independently. We should be moving as a united army, all obeying the same orders. And you notice here in these verses, it says there were 50,000 all keeping rank. Not one of that 50,000, or even two of them, were doing their own thing. 50,000 all with that one aim, with that one purpose, with that one direction, all trained together. They were governable and subject to the rules of order. When one went, they all went. When one stopped, they all stopped. When one turned to the left, they all turned to the left. And if one turned to the right, they all turned to the right. They're all subject to rules and order. And that's how it was with Gideon's men. Gideon's men were subject to order. They did what they were instructed to do. And in fact, it wasn't just the 300 that did what they were instructed to do. We're told that when Gideon was told to take them down to test them, there were 10,000. 300 lapped out of their mouth, at their hands, and drank water. The rest of the 10,000 bowed down and drank water. But Gideon said to 10,000 less than 300 to return to their homes. They didn't complain and say, well, what are you going to do, Gideon? We don't think it's right that you're all going to try and defeat this host of Midianites all on your own with just 300 men. The 10,000 went home. They were disciplined. The 300 that were with Gideon, he divided them into three companies. They too were disciplined. They divided into three companies. They took the trumpets that they were told to. They took the earthen jars that they were told to. They took the torches that they were told to. And on the surface of it, just think of this. There are those 300 men who are facing, it says, an innumerable host. Just the camels of the Midianites were like the sand by the sea, let alone the men. And there were those 300. And Gideon said to them, take a trumpet each man, take an earthen jar each man, take a torch each man. Whatever are we going to do against this enormous enemy? But they did it. They were disciplined. Gideon's men were disciplined. And you see, everyone was trained, and everyone kept rank, and everyone was prepared to work in the same way, with the same purpose and aim in mind. And we're to be loyal. Just the soldiers are to be loyal to their secular army, the soldier is to be loyal to his company, so we're to be loyal to the church, to the local church. And it says of these people here, they were not of double heart, in verse 33. And in verse 38, they were a perfect heart. They were not causing pain or harm to one another, but they had warm hearts, cool heads. And then there's another point about this. I've mentioned this in a way already. Soldiers have training. These soldiers had training. Men in the British armies, British forces, have basic training. When they first go in, there's a number of weeks when they have this basic training, which they're taught to march and to drill and to use their equipment. No army can keep step without training. But you see, it's the same with the army of the Lord Jesus Christ. Christian soldiers, also, we need training. So often we overlook this. We shouldn't be surprised that we need to be trained to do certain things. But then, there's another issue here. More can be achieved by working together than can be achieved on people working on their own. Working together accomplishes far more than even the most zealous person on their own. Members of a local church can achieve far more together, working together, than even the most zealous believer on their own. Yes, a zealous believer may accomplish certain things, but if they're working with other believers, working with the church, a great deal more will be accomplished. Believers working together in outreach can achieve more than just one, because you see, the presence of other believers, let alone other things, backs up the testimony of a believer that may be speaking. There's no lone ranger Christians in the New Testament. And as I was thinking about this, an example came to my mind that I experienced many years ago about people working together. When I did my national service, we were getting near to the end of our basic training, which was about 8 weeks. We learned by that time that you didn't ask questions, you did what you were told. Well, one day the drill sergeant took us to a field on the camp. Lying on the ground there were probably 4, maybe 6 telephone poles. So the sergeant said to one of the men, "You, come and pick this pole up." And of course, he went to the middle of the pole and he just couldn't even budget, let alone do anything. So he said, "No, no, pick up one end." So he goes to just one end and tries to pick it up. He couldn't even shift that. So he said, "Oh, wait, try it. Somebody else." He got somebody else to try it. Exactly the same thing. Because, of course, no man can pick up a telephone pole. And he said, "Right, 6 of you that side, 6 of you this side. Now pick up the telephone pole." The 12 men picked up the telephone pole. But then he said, "Run to the other end of the field with it." So they ran to the other end of the field. When they got there, he said, "Put it down." And he did that with each of the groups of men, shifted all these telephone poles to the other end of the field, because he was demonstrating that what men could do together, what people could do together, was far in excess of what one could do on their own. But I often think to myself, well, when we went to this field, the telephone poles were at this end of the field, and they were all carried to that end of the field. I'm sure that the next draft of men move them all from the far end of the field back to this end of the field. But anyway, that just demonstrates the point that working together, we can achieve far more than on our own. But it also tells us something else. With those men that are carrying the telephone pole, if one slacked and just tried to pretend and didn't bear the weight, all the weight fell on the others. So if there was one man out of the 12 who just sort of putting his shoulder to the pole but not really bearing the weight, well, all the other 11, they were carrying the weight. And it's the same in the church. But you know, there's a wonderful thing that you find in the Bible, and it comes two or three times. And I think it's something that we tend to overlook. That the world trembles when it sees the church united. When Israel came out of the wilderness, they came to Moab, and it says of the king of Moab, Balak, son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Ammonites and Moab, and was exceedingly afraid because of the people, that they were many. They were afraid. Israel, at that time, yes, they were quite a number. They'd had one or two victories. But really, they were just a wandering tribe in the wilderness. But we find the other nations were afraid of them. And you'll find this with the church. But when the church is united, the world are often afraid. It's when the church are united that the world starts shouting and complaining. If the church is weak and divided, well, the world don't complain because they know that the church can't do anything. When the church is united, the world get afraid. Often we tend to think, well, the world have got it all. They've got the power, they seem to be successful. They seem sometimes to act in a way that undermines and oppresses the church. But in actual fact, quite frequently the world are afraid when the church are united. But you see, we must be united too. If we cannot be relied on, if we're never there when we're most needed, then somebody else has got to fulfill that position. Somebody else has got to do that job, or it doesn't get done. So often in these days, I'm not referring to us particularly as a church here, but so often in these days in the church in this country, things don't get done. And so the world think, well, we can override the church. But if the church was united, the church would be not only stronger, but the world would fear the church more. And then you see, there's another problem. Some want office without hard work. But you see, in an army, you have to put the hard work in to maintain that discipline. But preparing sermons, preparing Sunday school lessons, even cleaning the chapel, it all involves hard work. And we are to be united. But there's also a serious problem too in these days. We used to seeing soldiers march and drill, particularly on television maybe, trooping the colour and so on. And people watch the soldiers on parade. One guard or trooping the colour, whenever it may be. And they're just spectators. They just watch. If you've seen the trooping colour on television, you just watch. You haven't taken part. You just see the outcome. You haven't taken part in the months of training, the hard work that all those soldiers have put in. Yes, it looks good. Yes, it's a pleasure to watch. Yes, it gives enjoyment. But you're only a spectator. But you see, Christianity is not a spectator activity. It requires involvement. But there are many in this country who are just spectators. They go to many meetings. They enjoy those meetings, appreciate those meetings, but they don't take part in the hard work. They're not part of the army. They're spectators. But you see, it requires hard work. These Old Testament believers, going back to what I said at the beginning, the people that kept rank, they kept step. They were involved in that hard work to be able to work with the others, to form a cohesive army. And we must remember too that whether it is a sermon or address or Bible class, Bible class or Sunday school lesson, it all needs preparing. It all needs preparing by someone. And if we're to be a cohesive unit in the Lord's army, we need to be as these people were, people who could keep rank and keep step. May the Lord help us then to give some thought to these things, that yes, the Lord's called us by grace, but he's called us into his army, to be part of his army. But it doesn't mean failure, because as I mentioned earlier, Paul could say at the end of his life, I have fought a good fight. He could stand and he could write to Timothy and say, I fought a good fight. May the Lord grant us then that we all may be able to say when we come to the end of our earthly pilgrimage that I fought a good fight, and that the Lord has indeed used us in his service. A second hymn this evening is 741. Oft in danger, oft in woe, onward Christians, onward go. Bear the toil, maintain the strife, strengthened with the bread of life. 741.